My name is Paul Spahn. I'm a mechanical engineer, product developer, entrepreneur, and 3D printing addict. Once you get the bug, there's no stopping. So really, it's for real. I want to thank Sean and Teresa for inviting me. Sean for hounding me.
Who would come? We wouldn't get anybody to come.
And he's been relentless about it, so he succeeded. So here I am, and I appreciate all of you coming to listen. I haven't had this kind of an audience in a long time, so this space is very exciting. I have brought some handouts for you guys to keep. That in this basket, most of these parts are made out of PLA, which is a corn-based material, and it's biodegradable. In that basket, you'll see a bunch of black material. That's ABS, so that's an engineered plastic. Mechanical engineers, we want ABS. I have a case of goodies. I mean, I'll bring them out, but it's not to be taken. I'll just bring them out as examples. So maybe I'll do that afterwards. Okay. I've been using 3D printing, that's what it's coined now. It's always been known as rapid prototyping, and I've been using it since about 91. I developed Cisco Systems products for about 19 years, and the very first product I tested this process on was the Cisco 4000, which is a 2 or 3 RU product on a bezel. And that was developed in 91, and I did that with Raycam. So I used the SLA process. What I've outlined here is kind of the background and history on this handout. And I've tried to show pictures and little captions as what they are. This front page primarily deals with professional printers. The back page, the top section, it continues with professional printers, but then it moves into the consumer grade printers, so and their capabilities. So I hope this helps as a kind of a follow along. So in the 70s, SLA was developed, stereolithography. That was the first 3D printing process, which is what we used at Cisco initially. 80s, fusion deposition modeling, FDM, came about. Also SLS, which is typically powder. SLA is liquid photopolymer that gets cured by a laser one line at a time, and then it just builds the process. So it just does it one layer at a time, kind of like a CAT scan. CAT scan takes pictures. If you have 100, 200, 300 layers, you can, let's say that you do a scan of your brain, you can put all those layers together, and now you have a object. It's a 3D representation of your brain. That's basically what 3D printing is. Surgeons actually use this now, with the source being the CAT scan, of course. In the 90s, the Rapid Prototyping Service Bureaus came about, which is right about the time that I joined in. In 2007, the very first consumer-grade printer came out, the RepRap. I don't know if any of you have heard about that one. It's a self-replicating, so it makes its own parts. It's very cool. And since then, it's been just nonstop. And the reason it came out is Stratasys, the one that invented FDM, their patent ran out. And all of a sudden, everybody joined in. Anybody that was a maker, a creator, or whatever that wanted to get in it, they started developing their own printers, and that's where we're at. And there are at least, there might be 50 different printers out there now. Could be more that go as low as $400 and maybe to about $4,000 or maybe possibly more. So these are the entry level ones. Last year, the consumer level printers hit the news media and it just went crazy. And this year, MakerBot hit the Today Show and 3D Systems sent out the Cube, so the Cube is now in Staples for $1,300 and so on. The only warning about the Cube is it's developed by 3D Systems. It works just like the other ones, except they have cartridge filament. It's in a container, therefore you have to buy from them, and it costs you 4 to 5 times the cost that all other filament costs. So other than that, that's it. Okay, moving on to the pictures. For those of you who have been on YouTube and seen all the wrenches, this wrench thing, adjustable wrench, has been pretty popular with the videos. So they scanned one with a 3D scanner and brought it into the CAD system and then replicated it, scaled it up, and just printed it in a powder printer, which is the middle one right below Jay Leno. That's a Z printer, and it does powder.
So when you think about the business opportunities that this technology enables for bootstrappers, what are the kinds of things that you're looking at?
What's been happening with me is, during my years doing product development for Cisco and other places, and this is very similar, I'm sure this is very familiar for a lot of you, is you come up with ideas, right? You might sketch them, and they run around in your head, and you think, oh, how could I do this and develop it? It costs too much to do, da 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 da. With a 3D printer, it enables you to, if you can design it on CAD, it enables you to design it, print it, iterate, fine-tune it, and then go take it somewhere and bring it to market, test market it, which is, I'm doing that right now. Moving into that with some products, and I'll show that to you, at a very reasonable cost. So, I mean, a decent printer can cost you, let's say, $2,000 to $3,000, and the material, a roll, is $45, and you can print a whole bunch of stuff. So you can get them all colors and different materials. It enables you to go nuts. That's, by the way, the cathedral in Russia. But that was a failed part. It's gorgeous. I love that cathedral. All these little parts, a decent part might cost me a buck or two. We're talking nickels, dimes, quarters here for what you've seen. This is in one-offs, right?
Yeah.
But if you go prototype that at a proto shop or a service center, something like that will cost you $25, $50. So it's quite a deal. So I don't know where the recycling model is going with 3D printing. I'm sure there are people thinking about it, which is one of the reasons why the PLA is so popular, because it's biodegradable, and there you can only put so much regrind in.
Yeah.
So that probably applies to extruded.
Yeah, so your print quality goes way down, but once you heat the plastic up, you know, the mechanical properties change a lot. So that a lot of hobbyists, they don't care so much, so they'll print a part, recycle it, but, you know, the troubles that you have with the really cheap printers, and if you buy cheap materials as opposed to higher quality, is you're going to get really degraded parts off the MakerBots, the RepRaps, those kind of printers.
And you'll experience a lot more problems. I'm sure it's going to happen. I'm sure it's happening. But I think it's going to be more for other recycled, probably not for printing, because I wouldn't use it, because I want good quality material. So, but I would use it for other things.
Why don't you show some examples of what you've done?
Cool. Those of us that 3D print, we use a lot of this. There's a build table that you print your parts on, and you put the blue tape on there, and it helps adhere to it. Okay, we'll start with these two. These are some parts that I'm developing, and they're consumer good. One is printed on its side, gave more strength, and then the other was printed on vertically. And if you look on the second page, the white one was printed with the MakerBot.
Like a ball worker, right?
Yeah, or it could be one of those Star Wars ships. And this one was printed with the second one where it shows the three or four color printers. So those are two different printers that have different capability. Those are larger parts. This I'm just going to show in the bag. This was for a customer, but it gives you an idea. I scaled three different sizes. I had a quarter scale, half scale, and the beginnings of a full scale part. And the full part scale part is 100% filled, so its density is 100%. But it has what's called support material, and that's what it needs to help build it. This is an iPhone case. This is a part I designed, and all it was is I came up with a better widget. This is a plenum, an air plenum, Ander, for the Ultimaker, which is the colored printer. But it's a origami type, and it kept coming apart, so I was getting frustrated because when it comes apart, it catches on the part, the model that I'm building, and then it destroys it. I mean, it's a goner. So I developed my own. It is a little better. I've got two revisions. You're welcome to pull them out of the bag and look at them and so on.
So in the same way that you had desktop publishing driving the laser printer, the existing CAD tools can sketch a 3D shape and then take what kind of file would I bring to a service bureau or a firm to?
So what you need is you can develop it on CAD, and there are so many CAD systems available out there for free now. SketchUp probably being the most popular. I think Autodesk has something called 123 CAD. And I think they just bought Tinkercad and opened up all the bells and whistles to the public for free. So Autodesk is doing their same thing. They just give it away, making sure that they get all the people. So it outputs an STL file. From the STL file, what it does is you take that STL file, run it into what's called a slicer program. And the slicer program essentially does what the CAT scan does. It creates layers. And from those layers, so one of those tall parts like that, those bigger parts, that might be 400 or 500 layers, depending on the orientation, how tall it is. Those layers are describe the G-code. So for those who are familiar with G-code, that's essentially what runs any piece of equipment that does XYZ axis, like CNC milling, CNC routing, and all that kind of stuff. So it's basically CNC printing or whatever. And that's the actual language that drives it. And some of the splicers actually let you preview it, which is very cool. So that's kind of how it works. And you can download from Thingiverse, which is put together by MakerBot, thousands and thousands of little objects and upgrades. Speaking of upgrades, this is an extruder upgrade for my Ultimaker. So it's a functioning assembly, but I wanted to bring that because I wanted to make sure that people understood it's not just a toy. It can make some serious parts, even though it's just plastic, but it's very functional. So that kind of goes along with the rep wrap, the self-replicating, right? So you can print your own improvements, and I'm making some improvements of that improvement. Upgrade. So I'm going to pass around a few things. Oh, before I do that, these are examples of how you iterate. This one was built flat, horizontally, and structurally for the mechanical engineers, it wasn't that good. This one was built vertically, and it has better structural properties. So I'll peel it. This is ABS, but ABS has its issues. And what's the thing that's on the bottom is called a raft. It's part of the support system. Now, just to let you calibrate some differences, these four parts I'm going to pass around are printed on professional models. This one was printed on a $10,000 Mojo, which is a Stratasys device. This was printed by a service, Quick Parts. This cost $125. I can print it for a buck or two. This would probably be somewhere around it. This was printed on a higher-end 3D systems, PolyJet. So this printer will be able to do plus or minus 1,000s, even a half thousand. So this is FDM technology, fusion deposition modeling. This is PolyJet. technology where it take, not sure if it's powder, I think it might be a powder, it deposits binder and, no, that's this one, sorry. This is another, and I don't know exactly that you can print anything inside it. So this is high resolution, that's why I'm passing this around. This is from the powder printer, and it's a fully functional part that was printed all in one build. And I'm going to pass this one around. Please be careful with it. This is from a $60,000-$70,000 printer, 3D Systems.
So it printed it with this thing already flush inside.
Yep. What it does is it prints, it solidifies all your geometry, and wherever there is no geometry, where there's a space, it just doesn't solidify. The powder just stays powder. So when it's done, you blow it away with an air hose, and it's a fully functional part. This is for us mechanical engineers, part designers, this is a great way to show a client of what it's going to look like in a cross-section. I mean, it's right there, and you see the inside guts in living color, and it's cool. The color is brought out by they do a post-process, I think it's like a super glue, and it brings out the color, and then it kind of seals the powder. The powder is gypsum, and for those of you who don't know what gypsum is, all the sheetrock in every house and so on, that's made from gypsum. So there are a lot of different powder printers out there. Powder is probably going to be the biggest. These are more expensive printers, but these systems that print in powder, they'll print ceramics, they'll print steel, they'll print titanium, they'll print, you name it. There are dental printers out there, there are jewelry printers out there, and if you look at the handout, there's a bioplotter, which prints body parts.
So the ones that are doing metals like that, you sinter it afterwards?
Those are sintered. Those are laser, SLS, laser sintering.
Laser sintered, not oven sintered.
Not what?
You don't have to put it in an oven to sinter it afterwards.
I think they do have post-processing, absolutely. To cure it and harden it, absolutely. Yeah, it's done. Yeah. And I'm sure it's process-dependent, but there's a lot of different technology out there. And I'm not completely familiar with all of them, but those are probably the most expensive machines because people just have a hard time affording them.
So what kind of opportunities does this enable by having this technology now? What kind of business opportunities are you thinking about that wouldn't have been possible, let's say, 5 to 10 years ago?
Wouldn't have been possible 5 or 10 years ago.
So in the same way, for example, that having a desktop printer, instead of going to a huge offset printer and spending, you know, setup charges plus this, plus this, plus this, it seems like this should kick off a whole wave of new kinds of products.
It will, and that's kind of what I was trying to explain with giving you a kind of cross-reference, I mean, cross-section of what's already being developed. Mm-hmm. It's going to be endless. I don't think there's going to be limits. You can print steel, ceramic, wherever you want to apply it. The medical industry, when they do the CAT scans and do, let's say they print the brain, they can evaluate how they're going to go in and do their surgical plan, and they can save half the time because they know exactly what they're going to do. That's how they're using it. There, even a mother that has a baby, you can get your unborn printed. So it's endless. They're doing chocolate printers. They're doing, in a few years, they're already working on it. When you go to the auto parts store, you're going to start buying parts that were just printed in the back room. They weren't stocked on a shelf. They were printed. They're already developing them. They're looking at all the IP, how they control that, and how that's processed so they don't lose their IP. So
do you think that so much of manufacturing is done outside of the United States today? Do you think this is maybe...
That's coming back. That's on my predictions. I truly believe... They're already talking about in 2 years that the cost of doing business in the U.S. is going to match up with China. We are now at par with Mexico. In this, when I say cost of doing business, I'm talking about total cost. Not just part cost, because that's not total cost. Total cost includes everything, right? Time lost, communication, hidden cost, all that stuff. Shipping. 3D printing is going to have a major effect. There's a lot of companies that are already staying, keeping their business here and just buying 3D printers, particularly doing castings and stuff like that.
Yeah, the savings on freight would be
It's huge. And the time to iterate. There are companies that, for those of you who are have ideas that want to try them out and at low cost, there's places like Shapeways, Sculptio, a bunch of others, where you can create an online account, you upload your design, you have an online store, people order from that store, they print it, they ship it, and they send you a check. The ability to do business on your own is so easy now. The cost is low. I think that's the big thing, right? So the
re-onshoring is an interesting theory.
What?
The fact that manufacturing may come back onshore, yeah, enabled by this, is very interesting.
It's huge. Okay, I'm going to pass.
Isn't time going to be sort of the limiting factor in how quickly parts and pieces can be produced? When we talk about bringing manufacturing back on, to the U.S., and, I mean, in order to get high-accuracy parts, you have to go slowly, right?
No, this process right now this technology is intended primarily as prototyping process, right? And keep your costs down and you get parts back.
Inherently low volume.
Yes. But there are pieces of equipment out there that I don't even know about, that probably Shapeways owns and Sculptio, that can actually produce parts at a much lower cost. That can they compete with injection molding? No, not yet. But they will. Well, it'll just be a matter of time. Eventually, tooling is going to go away.
Yeah, mold makers, they're going to go out of business, certainly.
This is a disruptive technology. It will change. Tooling is going to go away. Shipping, stocking, distributing is going to go away. It's just going to change everything.
So when you think about the quantity curve, if you were going to build... So how long does it take to print something like this?
Well, it depends on the resolution. That was high resolution.
So are we talking...
Maybe a couple hours. Well, okay. This one, a couple hours because it has support material inside. Okay. This one, let's say, half that time.
So one printer might make 6 parts a day.
Yeah. Entry-level printers.
Entry-level printer.
Real printers, professional printers, they'll do a lot faster. Because you can do...
They might make 20 parts a day?
Yeah. You can do 20 in the build.
Oh, 20 in the build.
So whatever takes an hour, you can do 20 per hour.
So you work in small batches then?
Yeah.
Isn't it reasonable to sort of judge this as being analogous to copiers and printers? There's high-speed printing in the world, but everybody has these days, and they used to before, has a copier in their house.
It's very analogous, and if you look at my last line in my what I predict, they're just like a microwave. Everybody's going to have one of these probably in the next 10 years.
Print that broken piece of china.
Print a cupcake. Print a pair of shoes. You name it. It's because you're just going to download it from online and bring it in. You got to have the materials, of course, and then you can print whatever. So you're going to stock materials for what you want to print.
Yeah.
You're going to walk into Safeway. You're going to want a birthday cake. You're going to want some cupcakes. You're just going to go punch in whatever selection. Whole bunch of in-the-cloud CAD systems going up. Tinkercad probably leading the way. That's why Autodesk bought them. because of ease of use, it was designed for kids to tinker, exactly that. More powerful than just tinkering. So actually adults and people that are not familiar with CAD, they're using it. SketchUp. I really want to encourage, I want to have talks at schools and help them get kids going. If you have kids, Maker Faire, take them to the Maker Faire. It'll just stimulate thought like you wouldn't believe. It just happened here, but it'll be back around in another year.
Back to the time sensitivity issue. You're talking about the bio printers. So it sounds like you're talking about maybe doing a pre-surgical approach. You get a 3D image of the brain, tumor, whatever you've got going on in there. And that sounds like a really time-sensitive issue where it's like we're going to operate in a week. How long do you have to make that model? And
It prints overnight. The complexity could be a few hours, mm-hmm. depending on the resolution you want, the thickness of each layer. Or it could be overnight if you want the really finest resolution. So the surgeon comes back in the morning, checks it out. Okay, I'm going in this way.
So from the time you get the 3D image,
yep.
you feed that into the printer and you can...
Yep. And you can assign colors so you can see where, let's say, the tumor is and say that I want the outside clear. So you can see your target, right? So it's insane. If you didn't see it on the handout, there's a 3D printer in space. You print parts out in space because UPS doesn't deliver.
So self-generating or to fix ships and things like that.
Same thing on aircraft carriers and big ships that are out in the water all the time. They have 3D printers. They have plastic ones. They have metal ones. They print their stuff.
How many companies are producing the medium that's used to produce these 3D models?
The medium? The material?
The material.
There's extruders out there. I think there's a patent on the extruder, on the filament. And so therefore, some people believe that the filament's too expensive. I don't think if you can make stuff for a nickel, a dime, $2, whatever, then there's a lot of people getting into it. Universities are participating, producing new materials. I just ran into some at the Maker Faire. They're producing concrete powder, wood powder, all kinds of powder. There are people that extrude all the filament. They're trying to find a way where they can get around the patent, or who knows, because they want to reduce the cost even more. New materials that come out regularly, there might be 50 materials that come out every year. It's growing like crazy. I saw my first powder printer, which just does the powder. So those are the ones that enable all the different materials. Mm-hmm. An entry-level, consumer-grade powder material at the Maker Faire. And those are the guys that are going to fight with the 3D Systems legal team. There's one printer, the professional printer, that did that large wrench in the pictures. It's Object 1000. It'll do 22 materials in one build. You can print a fully functional whatever in one build with rubbers, plastics, ceramics, you name it, in whatever colors, one build. It builds this big, and it sits on a pallet. I saw a race car, a small-scale race car that's built, and they got the biggest wrench now. So
how big are the smaller printers physically?
Physically, my very first printer was the on the back, the one with the colors next to the MakerBot. That's a Ultramaker, and that is the best footprint relative to build size printer out there. So it might be a foot by foot and about 16 inches tall, but it builds 8.25 by 8.25 by 8.25. Professional printer, some of them are this big, right? 2 feet by 2 feet, we have 2 feet, only print 5 inches by 5 inches.
Because of the resolution.
No, I don't know why. It's a waste of space.
Does it make a good quality?
They claim they make better quality. I think they have features in there that have better control. They keep the filament in a contained bag, so they probably keep the dust out of there. Maybe the humidity is controlled better. There's some things that are better, absolutely. But you pay for it. four to five times cost for the same roll of filament that everybody else buys without the bag. They also print support material that'll wash away, but you have to have a device that washes away. I've got a printer on order that'll do two colors or two materials, so I can do multicolor, or the second material will be more support material, which can wash away. PVA, I think, is the support material. I'll be able to do assemblies. So I'll be able to print this part.
Back in Brazil, I worked with auto parts, and they said here that I'm probably out of business in 6 years.
Mm-hmm. No, you just have to adjust. You have to adjust.
You'll be more profitable. You won't have inventory.
That's right.
You won't have to import. You'll manufacture.
You won't need a big buildings.
You might not.
Won't like the owner of the car print his own part?
I don't know. If he's got some expensive printers, I guess so. But if he doesn't, no, he won't be. These are going to be very expensive printers that are going to print that quality of part.
Especially bevels.
Because these are parts that have to perform, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's going to be kind of a debate, right?
Yeah. Or maybe small parts like that.
Small aesthetic parts, non-structural.
Yeah.
But I was just at a show yesterday, and they had a whole engine that was printed. Well, the originals were printed, and then they made silicon rubber molds and then urethane castings and so on and so on. But these printers are getting bigger and bigger, and you can print a functional. You wouldn't be able to fire it up. That's how it started. That's how rapid prototype started. You make the positive. From the positive, you make a silicon rubber mold or whatever mold process. Where they're doing sand casting, they make 20 at a time. And the sand casting process is slow but tedious, but they make their original positives fund that. But the positive was made, you made a mold from it, and then you get urethane castings. And with RTV, you could get 20 to 25 parts, made reasonably inexpensive in those terms at that time. And they're real. Let's say this has some LEDs and it has some functionality. At some point in time, the circuitry is going to be built into it. Will it do high-speed stuff like routing? No. But it'll do basic functionality. Let's say it just brings power up to operate an LED, a switch, or whatever. It'll be able to do that. It'll take a long time to get to really technical stuff. But circuit boards in the future are not going to be flat anymore.
Are they making fabrics? Flexible clothing or
yes,
jackets.
That's one of the pictures in there.
There's a shoe.
There are shoes. The powder printers are the most popular for shoes. The ones that this part and this part in the towel. Those, the shoe companies are the number one buyers of the powder printers because they can do something right away. Because they can see what it looks like. Fabrics are being done, and in the fashion world, the models are already modeling printed parts.
Wow.
Might be a little uncomfortable, but they're modeling it. There's a picture on the bottom left corner. The gal in the top right corner of that picture and the one underneath, they're modeling printed parts. That's a full dress in the top right corner of that picture. So if you can engineer, come up with a linking, right, just like chain links, then you can create material. You can model. So.
Can you talk a little bit more about the medical applications? I saw you mention the body parts and things like that. I mean, where do you see that going?
So today they're already printing blood vessels. They've repaired skulls. The entry-level printer, some guy developed mechanisms for kids that didn't have fingers. So he developed some mechanisms that, with the movement of your arm, now they could grab things. There's already prosthetic limbs that are 3D scanned and specifically printed for your body.
Yeah, stump fitting.
Stump fitting. And they are, and you can make them, and you can design them the way you want them. That fits your style. A guy with a Harley Davidson might want chrome plated, this and that. And a gal that's into fashion, she might want pink, red, and whatever. You know, you can get anything. They say that in Africa, because prosthetic limbs are stolen. They're black market. With these custom wires, that reduces the chance of them being able to resell them. So where it goes from here, I don't know. Ears, nose, they're already doing fingers and all of that. And they use it with your cells. So you don't have that problem whether the body is going to adapt. Most of this is in development. It's not being offered, but I think in the next few years, these are going to be options.
The prosthetics is real today.
The prosthetics is real today. A lot of these other things are in development. There's probably more things that are real. The little mechanism, the guy, I think he went on Indiegogo, got funding to help, you know, help him manufacture for all the people, kids, the mechanisms. So one of the coolest things, I mean, there's so many cool things. Did you see the one about buildings?
Oh, they're printing buildings, yes.
They're printing buildings.
Printing buildings.
So imagine this huge 3D printer that prints the building a little bit at a time with this huge gantry that's just delivering concrete, and it's pouring it, and then with another crane that brings in the rebar, with another crane that brings in some beams, and who knows, windows, I don't know. It's happening. And that's how they think they're going to attack getting rid of all these shanties throughout the world. I think it's a great idea.
I want to thank you all for coming. Thank Paul again for taking part. You want to talk to Sam?